The following program is a sports handicapping show. That's right, we will be discussing sports betting and all kinds of other gambling stuff, including game predictions. As you know, not every bet will win, but we do our best. Feel free to use this information at your own risk, and remember, wager wisely, folks.
Broadcasting from the Vegas Video Network studios, live from the Las Vegas Strip, Covers.com presents Vegas Sports Day. And now from the sports betting capital of the world, here are your hosts, Teddy and the Professor.
It's Tuesday in Sin City, and you are watching Vegas Sports Day, the pulse of the sports betting world. I'm your host, Teddy Covers, joined as always by my esteemed colleague, the professor, Dave Malinsky.
Coming up today, how one college may not be standing pat concerning their future coaching plans, how 55 is actually not a bad way to drive if you're going to be on a long trip, and that great old college basketball phrase, they couldn't hit the ocean from a boat, actually turns around to work for us on the Tuesday night board.
Oh, Dave, where do you get this stuff? I got the show notes right here. I have no idea where you're going with at least two of those three references, but looking forward to seeing what we have over the second half of the show, and certainly looking forward to hearing your first take on a Monday night, or off a Monday night, I should say, that had really no intrigue at all in the NFL, but plenty of intrigue on the hardwoods.
Let's start with something that we talk about a lot, and we get a lot of comments from people back to us on, and it's when we criticize coaching strategies. And one of the things we should make very clear, if we had to coach tomorrow, we're not going to design a program as well as these guys do. We're not going to condition the athletes as well as these guys do. But there's one element where we actually would do better: game situation analysis. And as we get into college basketball, so much of that comes into play. Why are we going to do it better? On a typical Saturday, we will see as many close games in one day as most coaches are in an entire season. Over the course of one college basketball season, we'll watch more close games than most coaches compete in their lifetimes. Kevin O'Neill, Monday night for Southern Cal, reminds us once again of how these few games all year that they get into that are close often catch the coaches making the wrong decisions. Southern Cal last night got into the bonus against Nebraska in the second half with over 10 minutes to play. Nebraska never got into the bonus, even though they went into double overtime. So even though Southern Cal had that advantage for over 20 consecutive minutes on the court, O'Neill was actually slowing the game down instead of speeding it up to take advantage. And not speeding it up by pressing, but just playing at least a moderate tempo, not going into the stall that they did at the end. When you're in the bonus and your opponent isn't, and Nebraska wasn't close to the bonus for a long stretch, that's like being one pawn up on a chessboard. If you've got a one-pawn advantage, you want conflict. You want to wear those other pieces off the board so that your advantage comes into play. Kevin O'Neill didn't take advantage of that. Teddy, what do you bring with you for Monday?
Well, you've got a big, strong take on basketball and an overview of how you have to think about coaches. My take's simple. It's about live TV. And if you watched the show yesterday, and you're going to look at it and see it right now because I'm looking at the wrong camera. Exactly. If you watched the show yesterday, you're going to see very clearly at the end of the show, I did about 20 seconds where I absolutely looked like a stroke victim. And I'm not making fun of stroke victims, but I'm sitting there looking at the wrong camera going like this. You know, literally, it's got to be 15 seconds. Yeah, you have that clip that we could show the guys, Jacob? Yeah, this is me as Malinsky's closing out the show on yesterday. And I'm sitting there looking into outer space at least 15 seconds. It's going to be a classic blooper clip when we come back and look at the show 5 years down the line. But bottom line, Dave, live TV, anybody could look like a stroke victim, can't they?
Well, here's part of the problem is as this is happening, okay, I'm looking directly into this camera. I see Teddy is staring off to the side, and I'm thinking, what's going on? Because I'm so curious. And there's this little closet in here in the production studio, and there's this blow-up doll, and it says Jacob's prom date. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, are they inflating that? Is that what he's staring at? Is that what's going on off to the side? And I don't know. So I'm forced to deliver the show, try to get us home. And I had no idea what was happening, and in truth, I still don't.
Yeah, the bottom line is, well, brain fart, you know? That's the only expression I can use to describe it. Is occasionally, even on live TV, we're a month into the show now, and we've certainly, I think, gotten a fair bit better than the first week of shows where, you know, I was walking around like this. But still going to be some growing pains. Appreciate the commentary. Appreciate the feedback. We'll continue to get better. We'll continue to respond to your feedback. And, of course, responding to your feedback means opening the show, as we do every day, with a Market Watch. And it's time to talk about the opening lines for the teams that played on Monday Night Football last night. Let's talk about Oakland. 1.5-point road favorite, total of 44 in the Metrodome against the Minnesota Viking team that got their clocks clean pretty well from start to finish on Monday Night Football this week. And, of course, we'll be on a short week preparing for the Raiders. The other game, Green Bay, 14.5-point home chalk against Tampa this coming weekend, total in that ballgame sitting about 49.5. And, of course, we have to mention tonight's solo college game, the only game on the card, and we're getting another one of these weeknight MAC tilts right now. Northern Illinois, 17.5 over Ball State total, and this one kind of bummed me out, Dave. Total's up to 72.5, and I was really hoping that we'd be able to continue our success betting these weeknight MAC games over the total, but with the inflated number coming up and getting bet up even further this morning, I couldn't bet it myself. I couldn't ask my clients to do the same. A little bit bummed out with this line move in the Northern Illinois Ball State game.
Where we might find a window of opportunity tonight on that game, though, is, again, the line is now up to 17.5. We may see some 18s later. That's a big spread for a team playing defense as poorly as Northern is playing. We love Chandler Harnish. We love the balance of that offense. But they're not going to dominate the Ball State offense. Ball State can move the chains, get some first downs, eat some clock. At 18, I think our pockets are going to be in play before the day's out.
Yeah, that's certainly a real possibility. The one thing about this game total-wise also is that the Ball State's biggest defensive weakness against the pass. They cannot stop a good downfield passing game. Very limited roster, and they've had a lot of attrition since the start of the season during this quote-unquote bye week where they got a couple extra days. Head coach Pete Lembo was talking about how they needed it just to have enough healthy bodies to see the field tonight. But the bottom line is Northern Illinois is not a great passing team. They like to run the football. Their offensive strength does not necessarily play into Ball State's biggest defensive weakness. And there's one thing that we've seen from this Cardinals team this year out of Ball State. They have really strong character. We've seen them rally from behind on the road multiple times. We saw it on opening day against Indiana, where they rallied from behind in the second half to win that game. We saw it last week against Eastern Michigan, where they literally willed a victory in a tight game. And Ball State, if they win out, guess what? They're going to be in the MAC championship game. So a huge game tonight for Ball State, not less of a huge game for Northern Illinois. But, of course, Ball State's not the one that has to win by more than 17 points. Let's transition now into college basketball, Dave, because we saw, obviously, wall-to-wall action last night. Heck, if you woke up early and had a Kent State Moneyline ticket in your pocket, you're feeling good already today. But last night we had, you know, I know you had a big play on Nebraska that you were able to win in double overtime. Here on the show, we had a play on Stanford. Lucky, 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 man. It's nice to get one of those come our way. Obviously, the better bets you make, many times the unluckier you're going to get, because when you have right sides and you lose them late, that can be on the unlucky category. Stanford last night, at no point did they pull away until, oh, the last 4 seconds of the game. We had the turnover steal layup, contested layup, to win by 16. Got me off my couch with a yeah! How about yourself, Mr. Malinsky?
I don't make moves like that. And I hope poor Isaac wasn't awakened by that. You know, how about one this afternoon where you might be able to make money before the night games tip off? Some of these home courts, and I played a big part in that West Virginia-Kent State this morning, being able to catch that money line, subdued crowds because of the odd starting times. Rhode Island's got a good chance to compete against Texas this afternoon. Now, for those of you who are listening on download, you may have already missed a tip-off. For those watching live, game goes at 1 o'clock Pacific, 4 o'clock Eastern. Could be a subdued crowd in Texas. It's an awkward starting time for the locals to come to the game, but major thunderstorms in the area also. Why many people decide they just don't want to go out and drive in that kind of weather? Rhode Island plus 16.5 now starting to get out there. Certainly going to be in our pockets. Texas, another of these teams that brings no urgency in the early part of the season.
Yet another reason to watch Vegas Sports Day live. You have the 1 p.m. Vegas time tip-off. Recommendation from Mr. Malinsky. Speaking of recommendations from Mr. Malinsky, he recommends you continue to send in those emails, getting great questions every day, please keep them coming in. Email address sportsday@covers.com. Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at Vegas Sports Day. And let's not forget about the covers.com posting forums. Active threads and discussions going right now. Covers.com. Covers.com. Click on forums. When we come back, it's post-mortem time.
Are you looking for the latest odds, the fastest scores, the most important trends, and the best matchups and stats? Are you looking for the key late-breaking information that can make you a winner? Well, Covers.com has the answer. The world's largest sports betting community gives you a front row seat in the heart of the action, from the opening lines to the final scores. If you want to stay ahead of the game, Covers covers the numbers.
This is David Ivey from Pub Crawl. It's funny because this is David from. You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Okay, guys, time to scrub up and get into the operating room. And no, we're not going to dissect Jacob's doll. Actually, it looks a little bit like Lola Falana when fully inflated. But it's time for the postmortem, where we take you deep inside the game to show you things you should have seen, but probably didn't.
I don't even know how to start after a Lola Falana reference. Who is Lola Falana? I mean, seriously, who is Lola Falana? I have no idea.
You don't remember Lola Falana?
Never even heard the name.
For those of you out there watching on computer, do your Google search, and you'll see I'm really one of the most beautiful women of the 20th century, Lola Falana.
From what, 1920?
That's just cold.
I don't know.
That's just cold. Go stare into the camera again.
I'm looking at it. Pat Hill. Over the hill. Still be the Fresno State head coach this week when the Bulldogs head to Hawaii, but the plane ride might be a little bit lighter. Defense coordinator Randy Stewart announced his resignation on Monday, although he will remain in the program in some fashion, supposedly to aid in recruiting and what they termed film breakdown for the duration of his contract. Now, the key word here is DC Randy Stewart resigned. Well, here's what Pat Hill said about it in the press conference. He said, quote, several options were discussed. And then he said, well, in 15 years, I've never fired a coach. And then followed that a few seconds later by, oh, this is a first for me. So, yeah, the official word is that Randy Stewart resigned. The reality is that Randy Stewart was forced out by Pat Hill, and Pat Hill's Freudian slips during the press conference tell us a lot about his mentality right now. We talk about college football head coaches that had the world at their fingertips 5 years ago. Let's see, Kirk Ferentz in Iowa, he was mentioned for every hot job. Greg Schiano at Rutgers was mentioned for every hot job. Jeff Tedford at Cal was supposed to be moving on and up to better things. Pat Hill at Fresno. Well, all four of those guys signed contract extensions to remain with their current teams, and all four programs have significantly declined. Right now, Tim Skipper, currently the linebackers coach, will be taking over as defense coordinator for Pat Hill. Dave, what does all this mean?
It means if you listen to that press conference yesterday, it was such a Freudian slip. I've never fired a coach. He wasn't fired. This is a first for me. He was essentially fired. A preemptive move, we believe, by Hill to try to keep his own job. Here's part of the problem. Fresno State has some of the most passionate fans anywhere on the college football map. First three games this year, last three games, all under 30,000 fans in attendance. In fact, the last game against Louisiana Tech, 27,965. We're going to take one of Hill's own quotes to talk about one of the issues besides, because here's a stubbornness where we see a guy who thinks he should stay on longer than he should. If Mr. Paterno were watching, it would be kind of appropriate to bring this into play. This is from Pat Hill. I've been here 15 years. I've had a lot of friends who said, man, you shouldn't stay that long. Your shelf life won't last. You'll never make anybody happy. I've heard all that. I know that. I feel like I'm the best guy for the job at Fresno State. There's no doubt in my mind. With everything that goes on, I feel like I'm the best guy. You know what? I don't think you're the best guy anymore, Pat. You built your program about playing tough defense and running the football. That doesn't win in 2011. That defense you once had so much pride in is now allowed over 40 points, three games in a row, against pretty mediocre competition. I believe that move was a preemptive one to try to say, no, we're dealing with this in-house. We're going to be better next year. I'm on the job. But I think come next year, you're going to find your friends were right. You may have stayed a little bit too long. This next photo we're going to show you probably describes the run option plays that Denver's putting into play about as well as anything could. You see Tim Tebow looking at a defender before deciding whether to give the ball to the running back or keep it himself. That's what it's all about. It's that read option where you look at the defense first. Worked awfully well for Tebow in college, didn't it? Because he could run over a lot of college defenders. Now the Broncos have run this a couple of times, and it's worked. A game for the ages against Kansas City. 55 running plays, only two completed passes. That's only the second time in the last 25 years a team has won a game with only two pass completions. So now you're going to ask us, can this actually work in the NFL? Because defenses don't prepare for it, are you going to be able to catch them off guard? Is Denver actually onto something by letting Tebow run the ball instead of the traditional NFL models? Well, as we find out so often in the postmortem, when we dissect something, it isn't really new.
Yeah. In fact, we can go back to 1972 when Bobby Douglas ran for 968 yards with the Chicago Bears. And even way back then, you know, early 70s, there were folks who wondered, you know, can a QB do this? Is this going to be a start of something? Is this going to be something that teams are going to emulate? Well, the Bears finished that season 4-9-1. Not exactly a banner campaign. And Douglas went on to play six more NFL seasons with three other teams. He only ran for 972 yards in those six seasons combined, barely topping his 1972 campaign. We can look at some other flirtations. Look at the Colts, who brought in Oklahoma wishbone quarterback Jack Mildren 40 years ago. You probably remember that, Dave. I don't. But the bottom line is that Mildren quickly moved to defensive back, and among the first, and really only a small trickle of quarterbacks since then, who have been primarily rushers in a pass-first league. Now, we've seen guys in the modern era, like a Randall Cunningham, certainly, like a Steve Young, like a Michael Vick, have success with a run-pass option from the QB position. But all of those guys, all three of them, face significant injury concerns throughout the course of their careers. Look no further than what's happened to Vic in the last couple of seasons in Philadelphia, where he hasn't been able to stay healthy. And that seems to be a prevailing theme here for quarterbacks that handle the ball and rush the ball this much at the NFL level. Yeah, the offense can work for a short cycle, no question. Defense is only going to see it against one opponent that dares to try that type of unique offensive approach. But once we look and see what's happened when these quarterbacks try to run this run-first system, even back in the 70s, the QB gets hit far too often, and the defenders were slower and smaller back then. And even back with the Mildren experiment with the Colts, they were talking about, hey, he's taking too many hits. This quarterback's not going to survive. Now, we don't necessarily mean survival in terms of injuries that take a guy off the field. Certainly, there's a lot of that. And certainly, when we get to the Insider Six-Pack today, we're going to talk a lot about college football quarterback injuries that all have to do with mobile QBs taking too many hits. But in this instance, it's not always about the injuries that are going to keep you off the field. The injuries that you're going to try to play through, the ones that limit your effectiveness, and the ones that take any NFL player and turn them into a hobbled wreck by the end of the season. Those injuries do add up. They do mount. And the more hits a quarterback takes, the less likely he is to be able to finish the season having the same type of success running the football that he did earlier on. So the Tim Tebow experiment, yeah, it's been successful the first couple of weeks. Not convinced that's going to continue to happen down the road.
When we come back, how driving 55 actually isn't all that bad for you. It's Tuesday. We've already made our run to Harry's, and you're watching Vegas Sports Day.
Oh, hello there. My name is Brandon Gooch Hahn, host of Awkward Silence 2.1. And when I'm not living vicariously through Chris Phillips, I'm on VegasVideoNetwork.com.
Yeah. Livestream is your premier place to watch live events on the web, mobile devices, and connected TVs. See new events daily or broadcast your own at livestream.com. Livestream. Be there.
Before we go inside the numbers, let's answer some of the viewer email we've got. And here's a great question from Dan in Michigan. Quote, here's the question. As you have mentioned, there are a lot of young guys watching the show that are trying to create a career for themselves, like myself. So I think you should talk on strategies or what to do if you get in a rut and just can't seem to pick a winner. I know everyone gets in these losing streaks and watches as their account keeps dwindling. So what are the strategies to implement as almost a damage control? Thanks, fellas.
Our whole Inside the Numbers segment today is going to come out of this, and we'll throw up a graphic in a few minutes. Talk about realistic expectations. One of the things we really like, even though we're only a month into this, is the type of feedback we're getting, the letters we're able to read on the show, and things we've actually been answering privately, to see how many young people are enjoying the chance to get into an actual honest dialogue on these issues, because that's never happened before. So many times people's perceptions about this are based on, you know, advertisers from the tout industry, and all sorts of bizarre things about you should be winning 70, 75% of your bets. These things basically designed to sucker you out of your money. So what we're gonna do on this show, let's talk about what the realistic expectations are. That way those losing streaks are just what they are. They're just bad streaks. It's not something that's gonna be defeating of you. And that's what happens so many times is people think, well, I should be winning this amount. I should be winning that amount. And if I'm not reaching that, there's something wrong with me. No, there isn't. You can make money at this. If you follow what we do here every day, you will make money at this. But it's a long, slow, and steady ride. So the first thing you want to do when you say you can't find a winner, understand just what that is. Are you really losing badly, or are you not winning to a false expectation level that someone else set for you? Slow and steady will win the race for you, which we're going to show in a couple of minutes. In terms of this pacing element, you want to go in as calmly as possible each day. And one of the things we've said, going back a couple of decades now, is that what are your realistic goals? There should only ever be one: win your next bet. So nothing beyond that. They'll say, well, I have to win 60%, I have to make $10,000, I have to do this or that. Don't set goals that will then impact your judgment. Just try to win the next bet that you make and keep that calm process going. And you're going to find out you can be in this for a long time and actually make a lot of money.
I want to talk about the damage control element here a little bit, Dan. Great question, by the way. And there are a couple other questions we didn't get a chance to talk about today. Kinney 77, and we also got a Kevin from Baltimore. Thanks for writing in. We'll answer those questions later in the week. But when it comes to realistic expectations and damage control, the bottom line is you can't chase losers. I'm running pretty good in college football right now. I'm running pretty good in college hoops. My NFL's been ice cold. You know, ice, brr, cold. You know, so what do I do when I'm struggling in the NFL and winning in two other sports? Well, I'm going to look for the sports where I'm winning, where I found a good rhythm, and I'm going to play a little bit more there in terms of the number of plays and in terms of percentage of bankroll risk. When I'm ice cold in the NFL, hey, guess what? I'm not going to sit there, oh, I got to put out a seven-play NFL card next week. No, we're going to look, isolate a few strong opinions, and that's it. I'm not going to look to bet more NFL games because I'm struggling. And it's similar. When you're ice cold, bet less. Don't chase. Do it the other way around. When you're running good, that's when you want to expand. Hey, I'm seeing things clearly. The games are jumping off the page at me. It's a great opportunity to step up both the size and the number of your wagers. But boy, you don't want to do that when you're running bad. So that's my two cents on damage control, at least. You want to add to that, Dave?
Yeah, we'll talk about that notion of running good or running bad, because first thing, if you set the right expectation level, you might be losing but doing good work. You might be winning and doing lousy work. But if the expectation level's right, you're allowed to see what the value of your work is. We're very conservative when it comes to money management. Don't step up, don't pull back too much, just that slow and steady grind. But we're always able to look at every weekend and say, okay, here was the bottom line financially, which goes off to the side, but here was the bottom line on the ideas. So what you want to be able to say, you know what, the ideas I put into play worked, regardless of whether the outcomes were there or not. Now, you don't want that to become this self-fulfilling prophecy where you're trying to justify your past actions. But so many times someone would say, oh, I'm in a cold streak. I say, well, go look at the games. You're not really cold. You've got good ideas. You did not win those games, but your ideas were good enough going forward to be able to win. And that gives us probably the ideal time to transition now, Teddy. You want to take us inside the numbers, and we'll talk about what realistic expectations can be.
Sure. But first, you got to keep those emails coming, guys. Great questions every day. Again, email address sportsday@covers.com. We really appreciate you guys taking the time to send in your questions and your opinions. Let us know what you like and what you don't like about today and every day's video podcast. But as you mentioned, Dave, it is time to transition inside the numbers right here, because we have to talk about what we've been talking about, staying in this topic, talk about what realistic expectations and goals are. I've quoted the term 60% as a goal for a handicapper to reach. But you know what? If you don't hit 60%, there's still money to be made, isn't there?
Let's talk about what the realistic percentages are. Because again, you're not going to find this in university class. There's not a how-to book out there. We'll go back to our old friend Mort Olsch, who unfortunately is no longer with us. But if you were going to say that, list the true pioneers of the industry, put him at the very top. He got bothered back in the late 70s and early 80s by all of these touted advertisements of these 70 and 80% winners. So he put up a challenge. No one ever accepted it. Can you pick 67% winners over 100 games? We'll pay you 2-1 if you do. Mort had all the best of it in that. No one ever took him up on that. No one ever will. We would offer the same thing. We would actually offer 3 or 4-1, still have way the best of it. That's an unrealistic percentage. Even 60, you can hit in short cycles, but when you see the things we talk about in postmortem every day, these little bounces of the ball that impact results, you'll know that there are things inside a sport that are never going to allow you to win too easily. The markets are also too sharp. But let's talk about the realistic number. To say you're going to win 55% of your bets may bring no sex appeal whatsoever into play. To go 55 and 45 out of every 100 doesn't seem like it's magic. But boy, is that good. So let's say you come into Las Vegas for football season. You got a bankroll of $2,500. And we say, okay, you can play 4% of that bankroll on every game. Now, some might say 4 is a little bit high. We think that's okay for football, where you don't have a lot of plays and it's manageable. When we get into baseball and basketball, we might say 2% or 3%. But now let's go inside the numbers and let's show what that 55% means at that 4% of bankroll. You can realistically make 200 bets in a football season at that 55% return. So at 4% of your bankroll, look at what you would have done. That $2,500 that you brought out as your starting point would have earned back $1,100 at that rate. That's a 44% return on your money in 4 months' time. There is nowhere in the world you're going to go in the legal realm and find a 44% return on your money for that short of sample. That's how much that 55 can be working for you. If you want to knock it down a peg, let's say you're just betting 3% per game, that's still a 23.3% return on that original bankroll in just 4 months. Slow and steady will win the race.
Yeah, it certainly will. 44% ROI in a four-month span at 55%. That's a pretty good rate of return. Ask any investment advisor how they're going to get you 44% in 4 months on Wall Street. Ain't gonna happen. But what is going to happen is we're going to come right back with our Insider Six-Pack.
Traditional media believes that after about 3 minutes, you'll tune out. Most Vegas media companies think if it doesn't jiggle, you won't tune in. At the Vegas Video Network, we think both are wrong. The Vegas Video Network is the first and only live online broadcast network that specializes in insider news and expert views about Vegas. We combine great storytelling with the ability to watch when and where you want, on your computer, mobile device, or television. Discover the real Las Vegas. Visit VegasVideoNetwork.com.
It's almost 11:30 in the morning here in Las Vegas, which means, as you know if you've ever been to our fair city, time to crack open that first beer, right? No, it's time to pop the top on our Insider Six-Pack. We're not allowed to drink till we get off the air, but we do it in virtual time over here, whatever you want to call it. Bottom line, let's start with six pertinent topics for today's college basketball and the weekend's college football. We're going to start in Miami, Florida, where the Hurricanes, about nine and a half point favorites tonight at home against Rutgers. Big issues with Miami right now, really all over the place. I mean, Jim Larrañaga got a great reward after all those years at George Mason, building that program, being the first mid-major to crack the Final Four. He got a nice break getting this Miami job, and I think he'll do well here long-term. However, short-term, boy, they've got a lot of issues coming right out of the gate. Let's talk about the center, Reggie Johnson, an all-ACC prospect. 11.9 points per game, 9.6 rebounds per game last year. Well, he suffered an off-season knee injury in a pickup game. He's out for at least the first month of the campaign. And, of course, that was made worse when the other center on the roster, Julian Gamble, who could have been and would have been Johnson's replacement, well, he suffered a torn ACL. He's not going to play this year. The Hurricanes have also lost senior forward DeQuan Jones as part of the investigation into the Nevin Shapiro slash Adam Meyer disaster at Miami with the booster dollars funneling into that program. And even though they beat Tennessee Tech in their opener, 69-58, that was a fairly misleading final score. They were down by 9 at the 12-minute timeout of the second half before a furious late rally and some free throw shooting down the stretch allowed the Hurricanes to escape with a double-digit victory.
Looks like the question at UCLA is not when Reeves Nelson will be back, but will he be back? Leading scorer and rebounder from last year's team, had a long meeting with Ben Howland yesterday, walked away suspended indefinitely afterwards. Nelson has been a guy who's produced on the court, but has not been a good character player for the program. We don't expect to see him back anytime soon. Could this be a case of addition by subtraction? When you look at the roster, it may say no, but you may see these UCLA kids play with a better chemistry without him. One note, they do get Jeremy Anderson, guard who was suspended for that opening loss to Loyola Marymount. He'll be back on the court tonight against Middle Tennessee.
Let's go to college football and clean up some of the quarterback injuries from this past week and deal with how they matter moving forward. We're going to start in Cincinnati, where quarterback Zach Collaros, one of my favorite college QBs, this guy's made me a lot of money over the years. Well, he's been lost for the year with a broken ankle. And what they lose in experience in dropping down to Munchie Legault, one of the best names in all of college football. Munchie Legault, the new quarterback for the Cincinnati Bearcats. They lose some experience, but they gain opening up the running game with Legault as a dual threat QB. He brings a lot of athleticism to the position. Broke a 45-yard touchdown run against West Virginia this past Saturday. And as always, one of the key factors you want to keep in mind when a team is making a quarterback change, well, the opposing defense coordinators don't have film to watch of that young QB. So it can often cause confusion on opposing defense as opposed to being a slam dunk for the team playing against the backup quarterback.
One quarterback had been having a terrific season without getting a lot of national publicity, Keith Price at Washington. Number 16 in the nation in passing efficiency, over 2,000 passing yards already, 25 touchdown passes, spreading the ball around real well. Six different receivers with at least 25 receptions, all six of them at least three touchdown catches. May not see Price this week at Oregon State. Suffered a knee injury in that loss to Southern Cal on Saturday. List him as doubtful right now. His backup, well, you're going to know the name, Nick Montana. But does he have his father's game? Doesn't look like it. Still good enough receiving core where the offense might be functional, but he can't get the ball down the field as well as Price.
Although, I'm trying to remember what game I watched Montana come in for just a couple of plays, and he threw two perfect strikes down the field, one of which was caught for a big gain and the other which was dropped in the end zone. I can't remember what game it was, but he came in and looked okay for at least a single series. Let's talk about UNLV and Air Force. The Running Rebs did something that very difficult to do. They lost to New Mexico last week, and a lot of that had to do with the fact that they were down to their third-string quarterback, Taylor Barnhill, for most of that loss against the Lobos. Now, this week, don't know yet if it's going to be Barnhill going or whether the first-stringer, Caleb Herring, is going to be healthy enough to play, but it's worth noting that UNLV head coach Bobby Hawk probably going to have to make a decision fairly early in the week. Two very different styles of quarterback play. If they're going to run option this week, they're going to have to prepare for that early, obviously, and not change the game plan on Friday morning in an effort to hang with Air Force. For the Falcons, Tim Jefferson, a question mark this week. And Jefferson's been very good throughout the course of his collegiate career. But his backup, Connor Dietz, he's a senior. He's had plenty of opportunities to run this offense, both as a starter and as a backup throughout the course of his career. Plenty of experience in this system. Not the passer that Tim Jefferson is, but really, when you're talking about a power rating adjustment for UNLV between Jefferson and Dietz, can't be more than a point at most. Right now, Air Force, about a 23-point chalk at home against UNLV for this coming Saturday game. Total in that contest sitting at 49.
We go back to the Tim Tebow postmortem. We see all these little dings to different quarterbacks around the country. Nick Lamiason of Texas El Paso, groin injury, downgraded to doubtful for this week's game against Tulsa. Shows what happens when you just take too many hits over the course of the season. Interesting, though, there might not be that much of a drop if we listen to Mike Price, the head coach. Carson Megger will actually step in as the starter this week. He's completed 66.7% of his passes, which we like, but 2.2 yards per pass less than Lamiason, maybe less ability to get the ball down the field. But here's what Price said that intrigues us, maybe from a leadership standpoint. Said, I was very, very pleased with Carson. He was very cool, very enthused. He's fun to be around, more outgoing than Nick. Nick is more businesslike. You know, if you're going out there on the road as a big underdog, which they are this week, or as a big underdog to Tulsa this week, maybe having someone who creates a little more spark in the huddle might help when you get behind to keep that team playing with some life.
And speaking of sparks in the huddle, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got a spark of money time headed in your direction. We'll be right back.
No pressure. Hi, I'm... Hi, I'm Dennis Silvers from... Can't think of the name of my damn show. Golf and other four-letter words, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network, I think.
Okay, guys, it's money time! This edition of Money Time is brought to you by Covers.com. Remember, for all the key information you need in every sport, you want golf, arena, football, it's all there. Covers covers the numbers. Let's start our Money Time today in Columbus, Ohio, where the Ohio State Buckeyes 10-point chalk this evening. And we're talking about a team, extraordinary talent, no question about it, but boy, are they young. One senior, one junior, six sophomores, five freshmen. I know talent wins out come March. Does talent win out come November, Dave?
If it looks like Ohio State is too young and not ready to play, that's actually wrong. They've got so many kids who are young who were so far beyond their years. Jared Sollinger is ready for the NBA right now. You could almost consider him to be a senior in terms of basketball savvy and sophistication. But here's what's going to be interesting about Sollinger. And something that Billy Donovan does want any part of. Last year, Sollinger lit him up for 26 points and 10 rebounds in an easy Ohio State win down in Gainesville. But Sollinger this offseason went from 16.7 to 12.1% body fat. He's in tremendous shape. And if you saw that opening game against Wright State, you saw this big bull around the basket step out and make a three-point basket. Sollinger, our early candidate to be the player of the year in the college hoops, guy who just plays so far beyond his years, and he's that center point that they can build around. You've got him inside. You've got Kraft out running the point who, yeah, he's a sophomore. Well, guess what? He's a sophomore who's going to play like a senior because he got a lot of big minutes under his belt last year. Yeah, Ohio State may look young on paper, but I think they're going to come out of the gate pretty well.
Yeah, last year, 93-75, the Buckeyes win in Gainesville, and Sollinger in that ballgame, 26 points, 10 boards, and basically he was unstoppable. So, you know, when we look at what Florida can do defensively against Sully tonight, the answer is not a lot. You know, Billy Donovan as an underdog has a pretty darn good track record. Florida can certainly score from the backcourt. Rutgers transfer Mike Rosario has joined Irving Walker, Kenny Boynton, to give him a nice, solid backcourt trio. But in the frontcourt, they have issues. He's up against the sophomore, Patrick Young, tonight. And here's Billy Donovan's quote, I don't think it's just Patrick against Sollinger. I think our whole team has to really help out. If we put Patrick on Eric Murphy or Cody Larson or any of those guys on an island against him, it's going to be difficult. Definitely matchup issues for the Gators tonight as they travel to Columbus.
Let's go to Madison Square Garden. A classic doubleheader tonight, but we're going to do the second game first. Kansas up against Kentucky. Kentucky right now a 7-point favorite. When you compare the Kentucky roster to the Ohio State roster, yes, this is also a team that's very, very young. But boy, could this team be special. When you talk to some NBA scouts, they'll tell you that there could actually be 4 lottery picks from this Kentucky team. And there aren't many times in our lifetime we've seen 4 lottery picks on the court at the same time. I'm not sure, in fact, if there have actually been any. Could this Kentucky recruiting class possibly be the second best since Michigan's Fab Five?
Didn't North Carolina have a team that had, I know they had 4 first rounders on that national championship team a couple years ago. Were they all lottery picks? I don't remember.
I don't think they were not all lottery picks.
Because I know the Fab Five had 3 guys, and all the Fab Five trivia I got down, they had 3 guys get drafted among that. I believe Juwan went 8. Jalen went 8? As high as 8. They had Weber, Jalen, Juwan all got drafted in the top 8.
Now you know when someone's a fan, by the way, when it's first name basis. Juwan, not Juwan Howard. It was Juwan.
Yeah.
Now, when you were hanging around in Ann Arbor, did you call these guys by their first names?
Yeah, they used to come in. I used to manage a restaurant in Ann Arbor, a sports bar, a place called Touchdown Cafe that is no longer in existence. And they would come in on a regular basis and get some wings. And I'd let them hang out for a little while, even though they were underage. So, you know, what a nice guy. But they couldn't drink. Anyhow, what are we talking about? Kentucky? If we start getting Fab Fived out, we're going to be here all day. Bottom line is, when we talk about this Kansas team right now in Madison Square Garden, again, neutral site, but boy, it's something of a rebuilding mode for Bill Self. We're talking about the early outs for the Morris brothers, Josh Shelby as well, gone for the Jayhawks. They do not return a single player that averaged in double figures last year. And Bill Self, talking about this Wildcat team with, as you mentioned, as many as 4 potential lottery picks playing for Kentucky. Very young, but very talented. Self talking about this team. Hey, they've got men, and they've got a bunch of them. NBA people who have been to our practices and been to theirs, they're saying they've got men. You can understand why the early money has come in on Kentucky so far today.
And note that not only is Kentucky talented, but we see them meshing pretty well already. That opening win over Marist, 5 different players scored at least 14 points. But none of the 5 were Terrence Jones or Darius Miles, the 2 most experienced holdovers from last year's team. John Calipari's had this magical run of bringing in absolute first-rate point guards. Even though so many have been early outs for the NBA, he's got yet one more. Marquise Teague has a chance to be as good as maybe anyone except of people who've played for Calipari, except for maybe Derrick Rose. Teague's going to be special. Kentucky-Kansas later in the season, maybe a close game, but I think this early, Kentucky just simply may be too talented for a Kansas team that's going to learn to have to walk before they can run this season.
Now let's talk about tonight's opener at Madison Square Garden. Of course, we're talking about Duke minus 6, total in that ballgame, 138 I should say, against Michigan State. And the Spartans, it doesn't get any easier. They got North Carolina on the West Coast on Friday. Now they have Duke on the East Coast on Tuesday. A lot of travel and 2 tough opponents for Tom Izzo's Spartans to open up the season.
A lot of publicity tonight is that Mike Krzyzewski is going out to break Bobby Knight's career wins record. What'll be interesting, though, is that he won't quite be doing it the Krzyzewski way. This might be the worst defensive team he's fielded in about a decade. They're going to be terrific offensively. They're going to be so difficult to guard in the half court because when you look at Seth Curry and Andre Dawkins, the shooting range they have, it's been a long time since we've seen a team with 2 guys who had extended defense that far. When the defense extends, now you've got the Plumlee brothers working around the basket. They're going to be pretty good offensively. They're not going to be good defensively. So Duke is not going to have that same ability to pressure because they're not deep either. They're not going to be able to extend the defense the full court. They're not going to be suffocating, but they're going to be able to score and they're going to be able to run and play fluidly. That's going to be a little different than the way Krzyzewski has piled up so many of those college wins.
Yeah, Michigan State couldn't score in their opener against North Carolina. Certainly some of that had to do with the fact that they were playing on a ship in the ocean. But I thought you were going to bring up a Billy Ocean reference instead of some obscure thing that you came up with yesterday, or earlier in the show, I should say, Dave. But the bottom line is they couldn't throw it in the ocean. I mean, really, a very, very tough shooting night for Michigan State in the opener. 22 of 72 from the floor, 2 of 20 from three-point range, and the 2 teams combined for just 6 made three-pointers in 32 long-distance shot attempts in that opener on the aircraft carrier. Now, those stats, we have to take them with a grain of salt. Obviously, conditions not amenable towards a good shooting game. The sight lines were particularly bad for those two squads in the opener. Sight lines at Madison Square Garden, a fair bit better, and they're playing a team that wants to run. No question about that, Dave.
So let's set it up. It's play of the daytime. Well, we've got a Duke offense that's going to be very good, but a weak defense. And a Tom Izzo who actually likes to run so much more than the perception. You just don't get to run much in the Big Ten. Tonight, for our play of the day, we're going to go to Madison Square Garden, play that Duke and Michigan State game over the total. Not only a brisker pace than they're calling for, but higher levels of execution and close enough at the end to get some scramble points to aid our cause.
That's Duke and Michigan State over the total. And that, of course, is going to wrap it up for the Tuesday edition. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to spend with us. For Malinsky, I'm Savransky. Enjoy the games and good luck.